Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. Go figure. It's a contest that will win someone a year's tuition at the University of Lethbridge if they can decode the cryptic clues for solving the puzzle. And silicon is the mainstay of the computer revolution, but shrinking things down to the nanoscale means we'll have to find a replacement material for the next technological revolution. Richard Martel thinks carbon holds promise. And at the other end of the spectrum, the landscape level, the Alberta Research Council unveils its contribution to making integrated resource management a reality in Alberta. All this coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Recently, researchers in the field of nanoscience from across Canada and around the world gathered for a workshop in Edmonton. Dr. Richard Martel of Quebec now works with IBM in New York. He's looking to the future to find new materials that will take the place of silicon. The silicon industry presently has a stronghold on the microelectronics market. But Richard Martel makes a good argument for another material that he believes is better suited to the tiny world of nanoelectronics. And that's carbon nanotubes.
What engineers and scientists are trying to do is to shrink the dimension of silicon to smaller dimensions. Essentially, every year they scale the dimension by a factor of two, which gives an increase in density by at least a factor of an exponential increase in density every 2 years. And this trend has been observed for the last couple of years. And what result is just improve in speed, improve in performance, and a reduction in power consumption, essentially. And overall, you just get better device, better transistor.
You've made the case for carbon. Why? What's good about carbon?
Well, there's a common belief that silicon cannot go beyond some limits. And they will push silicon to the ultimate dimensions. Even they want to go to the range of 20 nanometer. And this is according to the roadmap. And there are a lot of questions, debates in there. But there's something for sure is silicon is limited because it's a conductor that has more or less bulk properties. It has a lot of scattering, so which dissipate energy. And you want to go essentially into a conductor that has almost no scattering, no dissipation when you switch it on and off. And that gives you will have a large payoff for power consumption or speed. So there is a need for alternative materials, what we believe. If we want the electronic to go beyond the silicon, you need to find a material that does a little bit better into the small dimensions. And carbon nanotube is one.
Nanotube, what's that?
It's a small... I call it like a molecule, but it's a small fiber of carbon that has about 1 nanometer in diameter. It could be microns long. And it has been discovered in 1991. It's a new form of materials. And we're learning how to use it, and we're learning how good of a conductor it is. And we find that, indeed, there is something interesting into it.
What makes it a good conductor?
Well... These are questions that needs more answers, an answer that is going to be much longer than this interview. But initially, first of all, it's a low-dimensional conductor, which means it's very small, and you don't need lithography to make it. It's a self-assembled structure, which implies that you don't need to scale everything down to be able to fabricate, because it comes like it is for a molecule, like a protein. It comes with some dimensions, and it's all the time the same. And it's the case of nanotube. They are small. They can be made very pure. And since they are small, then they are attractive for electronic because the electron into the system, the carrier, are essentially confined. And they're going to move in the direction you really want and without too much dissipation involved.
What are some of the problems that you face with this?
Oh, several problems, because it's the material we're trying to learn how to handle. And it's first of all, the material comes in a mixture. There is a mixture of metallic form of the nanotubes and semiconducting form, which is the one we use for making transistors. Now, we need to problem is to separate these two forms, and that's not solved yet. And the second one is to be able to assemble this in the form of an array or in the form of a structure that can be manipulated and integrated to make electronic type of devices.
When you look at the use of carbon versus silicon, what would be the extra advantage of using carbon?
In the case of carbon, it's more compatible with the human body. If we want to know what the machine will do in the future, it obviously needs to interact a little bit more with the human. And for now, we have a keyboard or a mouse. But I think the case of using carbon is makes it available. The chemistry of carbon is the chemistry we know about the bodies, and maybe this kind of material is more compatible with the human interface. And so maybe if you try to project in the future, there is a potential of using these kind of materials for interfacing the human with the machine, and in a much more convenient way than just a screen and a keyboard or something. I don't know exactly, but future will tell.
And what about the development of, say, medical devices that might be based on that could be used in the body?
Yeah, in the case of medical, you can build essentially, if it's compatible with the body, sensors or something that tells you if your body has a problem or if you're having unbalance of food or something like that. And maybe could be extremely useful for electronic application and medical type of... It's hard to define what's going to be, but definitely a possibility of discoveries and potential for future.
The work that you're doing, what lies ahead?
It's a good question. What we try to do is to find alternative for silicon. And the silicon is not yet at the end of the roadmap, and so there's going to be a lot of progress in computers. Now we're looking at alternatives and find out if there is anything out there that can give you something beyond what conventional technology will give you. And we know pretty much where silicon is going to be in just a couple of years, and we don't know where nanotube could be in some years after that. And if there's a very slim potential that this material can outperform the available technology, then that's something we should pursue, and that's what we're doing.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
That was Dr. Richard Martel. He's with IBM's Nanoscale Science and Technology Group in New York, and he was recently in Edmonton for a workshop sponsored by the National Institute for Nanotechnology at the University of Alberta. What do barcodes have to do with university tuition fees? Everything, if you're interested in going to the University of Lethbridge. All you have to do is decrypt a barcode and win a contest called Go Figure. Dr. Wolf Holtzman chairs the Math and Computing Sciences Department at the University of Lethbridge.
Yeah, it's a kind of interesting-looking image. It's essentially like a barcode on a soup can, except that it doesn't give you a price. It gives you a hint to where to look for the actual problem. The hint actually is the website that contains the problem that the students need to solve.
Now, what's the whole point of having this?
Partly to pique interest in things computer and mathematical-wise. Obviously, encrypting is a very important component in computer science. Encryption and coding things is what is commonly used for handling bank account transactions and so on. And cryptography is a very, very important aspect of network security and general computer things.
Now, every contest has to have a prize, and this one's a pretty significant prize. What's that?
We're offering as a first prize tuition for 1 year at the University of Lethbridge, actually $4,500. And this, there's a second and third prize as well that offer part tuition, $1,500 and $750 for second and third prize.
That's just amazing. Now, you did this similar contest last year, and you had quite a response. What was the contest last year? What was the puzzle that people had to solve?
We had an encrypted puzzle. It was a base 4 code, so a letter like A would be represented as 001 and so on all the way up to Z. And the entire problem was encrypted with this base 4 encoding, and once people had decrypted it, they encountered a problem that had a number as an answer. And so if you solved the problem and submitted the correct number to our website, then you were entered into the contest, and we had a draw, and quite a few people had the correct answer, actually, which is quite surprising to me.
Well, especially when you consider that everything, the rules, everything was encrypted. So before you could even get going on it, you had to decode everything. What kind of response did you have to last year's?
We had an incredible response. We had more than 1.5 million hits on the website from about 20,000 computers. We had hits from all over Canada, France, Norway, Afghanistan even, Hong Kong, all over the world.
How did people find out about it?
It was mostly word of mouth, although we did have quite a bit of press coverage. Numerous websites had stories about us. We were there was a story in the National Post and stories in papers in Norway and Thailand and Italy. So it was a very well-known contest.
With that tremendous response, how on earth did you actually go about picking a winner?
Actually, there was an eligibility requirement. In order to win the contest, you had to be a high school student in Canada. And that eliminated a lot of people that just took the contest for interest's sake and weren't necessarily wanting to get the prize.
What is the program like?
Well, we have a computer science program with about 250 majors currently, fairly small class sizes, and fairly friendly faculty. We offer the full computer science program, and we're trying to expand enrollment in computer science.
Now, the contest itself is being run in partnership with a magazine. What magazine is that?
It's the Watt magazine. They're out of Winnipeg, and they actually designed the barcode for us, the front part of this year's puzzle. We've really appreciated their help in setting up the contest. Watt magazine is a magazine directed at high school students, and they distribute it to high schools through mostly Western Canada.
Any hints on how to solve this one?
Well, what you're looking for is a name of a website, and the bars, as you might have guessed, have different widths depending upon different letters of the alphabet. Another hint is when you get to the website, click on the image, and there's a few more hints there.
How exactly, then, do people enter, and what's the deadline?
The deadline is December 31st of 2002. You can enter by going to the website, either at What Magazine or at the university. Our website is www.cs.uleth, that's uleth.ca.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure talking to you.
That was Dr. Wolf Holtzman, chair of the Math and Computing Sciences Department at the University of Lethbridge. Well, it certainly didn't take Dr. Dick Peter long to get things organized in his new job over at the Alberta Research Council. When I last spoke to him in August, he had just left his position as the Dean of Science at the University of Alberta, that so he could head up the new Integrated Resource Management Branch at the Alberta Research Council. Now, his grand plan for applying science to environmental stewardship across all sectors of Alberta's resource industries is out in the open.
Well, we're launched, which I'm very, very pleased and very excited about. So at the launch today, I outlined the overall plan and the areas that we see ourselves working in. And, of course, what we didn't talk about today is all the discussions that are going on with stakeholders about what the issues are and how we move forward on them. So those kind of discussions are going on all the time. And again, that's very exciting, and I see people really, really coming on side with the idea of, first of all, being a part of this overall program and coming to us for their research and discussion of issues, but also trying to develop partnerships between different stakeholders to try and move forward on a number of issues.
There were two things that really struck me during the presentations. One is that you already have a lot of things on the works, and this is a way to integrate them, in a sense, under one roof or one umbrella. And then the other thing is the wide range of areas that you're involved in. Could you just give people an idea of what some of those areas are?
Well, we have, I guess, starting with sustainable ecosystems. In that area, we deal with various kinds of ecological services, cumulative impacts assessment, integrated resource management planning and advisory services. Then we have environmental technologies, dealing with quite a wide variety of technologies, from solid waste to water treatment to manure. Environmental monitoring with, of course, all of the things implied there. And then also very exciting is our toxicology and environmental health group. So that's, again, all very exciting and lots of different initiatives underway. So thanks a lot, Cheryl. Really appreciate it.
That was Dr. Dick Peter, the Vice President of Integrated Resource Management at the Alberta Research Council. For his boss, John McDougall, the president and CEO of the Alberta Research Council, science must take a front seat if the Integrated Resource Management Program is to really succeed in maintaining environmental integrity.
Well, what we need is the scientific understanding so that we can manage, if you like, our industrial and human activities and ensure that in the end we continue to keep Alberta as a place that's an envious place for the world, a place that we all want to live in, and that we know is being managed effectively.
The thing that really struck me is that it's based on cooperation. Like, you're really going to have to bring in a lot of partners. Do you see that happening?
Well, the work we've done in the past has demonstrated that it's possible. And the one thing about a really grand idea, and certainly the environment is a grand idea, it makes it very much easier to make people want to work together, because they can see the results, they can understand the implications of what they're doing, and they really all tend to be driven by, you know, a bigger cause than just self-interest. So it's actually much easier in that area than probably any other.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Cheryl.
That was John McDougall, President and CEO of the Alberta Research Council. Alberta Environment launched an integrated resource management branch a few years ago. Cam McGregor is business manager of the branch, and he offers this definition of integrated resource management.
I think that integrated resource management is inherently about being a good neighbor, about knowing what each sector is doing, about knowing what the consequences of that are for Alberta, both in terms of economy, society, and environment. So I think that's what I mean by being a good neighbor.
So much of this depends on collaboration and people being able to develop a consensus of points of view in order to move ahead with the integration of different plans and things and still protecting the environment. How is the government going to be involved in this?
I think the government involved in two ways. We promote a program, Cheryl, of integrated resource management, regional strategies. We have one that has been completed in the Athabasca tar sands area. We have one going on in the northeastern slopes, and we have a new one starting in southern Alberta. And that's the entire South Saskatchewan River Basin, Milk River Basin. So a very large area where most of Albertans live and work. We also are partners in a lot of initiatives. And, of course, that IRM division within the Alberta Research Council is one of our partners. The Sustainable Forest Management Network that we were just talking about is another one of those partners. I think in terms of the integrated landscape management program that the Alberta Chamber of Resources, they're another partner that we have. I guess the final part that the government is involved with is promoting IRM, Integrated Resource Management for Sustainable Development, and we have all of those three are housed here.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Cam McGregor, Business Manager of the Integrated Resource Management Branch of Alberta Environment. One company that has pioneered many initiatives with what it calls integrated landscape management is Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. ALPAC's President and Chief Operating Officer, Bill Hunter, sees a good fit for his company with what the Alberta Research Council is promoting.
Well, as we've talked about before, Cheryl, the Integrated Landscape Management Program is all about how do we lighten the footprint that we leave on the land base and how do we look at opportunities around climate change and water issues in the province. So as we've established relationships with folks like SFM, the U of A with the senior research chair, as we do that sort of discovery research or at least analyzing and establish the data bank, we can therefore take that information and with a collaboration between industry and ARC and start to look at some models where we can exercise what we think are the mitigation strategies that roll out of all that analysis.
Part of the keys to the future success of these programs is collaboration, and you've certainly been paving the way between forestry and the oil and gas industry to try and develop collaborations there. How do you think that's going to work with some of these other industries to be able to bring them all together on a wider scale?
Well, recently I've been appointed to the board of ASRA, and I've also been appointed co-chair of AFRI, the Alberta Forest Research Institute. And since its inception with me, I've had numerous meetings with ARRI, Alberta Agricultural Research Institute. And this whole notion of shared responsibilities, agroforestry, tree farms, woodlot programs, and climate change and water issues is something that they're very, very excited about. So I think this is going to be a lot easier than we think of getting the other industry players on board.
What about the public? How do you deal with the skeptics on the public side of things?
Well, as you know, Alberta Pacific's history, you have to demonstrate. You have to show the results. You have to show the models that will impress them and or at least get them to understand and look for more opportunities to have more data on the successes of the programs.
What's your message to other potential players here?
Right across the sectorial suite of different companies, we're all having a tough time with world economies right now, and money is short, but we can't give up on research and development. It's our future. From an innovative process, the forest industry, for an example, needs to look at new value-added commodities and look at agrofibers, but we have to apply research and development. So we have wonderful institutes here in the province, U of A, U of C, U of L, ARC, and then some of the national institutes. So invest money, keep going.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Cheryl. Good to see you again.
That was Bill Hunter, President and Chief Operating Officer of Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. Another area where research collaboration is working well is in waste management. Dr. Salim Aboud is a research scientist at the Alberta Research Council. His projects dealing with landfill and wastewater treatment with the City of Edmonton provide a perfect example of how integrated resource management can be achieved.
Well, whenever you exploit resources, you have an industrial process. And these processes will eventually produce some kind of a waste. And the question is, what do we do with the waste? And if I can for a moment just tell your listeners, waste, as a colleague of mine at the university have always said, Bill McGill, waste is a verb, not a noun. We intentionally waste. So what we intend to do in our work with waste management is to change waste that started its life as a resource into another resource for another process.
Can you give me some examples? Because you're dealing not just with garbage, but all kinds of things.
Yeah. Well, for example, any organic-based waste or most organic-based waste, we can either throw them in the landfill where they generate methane, and that methane will contribute to global warming. Or we can take those organic-based wastes and compost them and make them into an additive that will go back to the soil to enrich the soil so that we can produce some new fibers, new organic material that will eventually cycle back into garbage or some other material, organic waste, that could be composted and complete the cycle.
So beyond garbage, you're also dealing with water and air issues.
Yes. With respect to the air, first of all, we believe there is potential for using a natural-based method, biofiltration, where we use natural microbes to treat gaseous emissions. We don't have to use chemical necessarily. I mean, some emissions will need that. But we need to try to use such technology, namely biofiltration, first. If it works, it saves us a lot of money, it's very cheap, and it's using a natural-based technology. The other area of water is if we can treat water to a quality usable for industrial waste, then we don't have to use clean water in industrial processes. So we can truly recycle that water.
You're working with the Research Council as a scientist, but you also have a whole pile of other partners. Who are they?
Currently, our partners in forming the Edmonton Waste Management Center and working in waste management, wastewater, are first and really strongly is the City of Edmonton. They're quite committed and they're really been progressive in thinking that way. Secondly, the University of Alberta and the colleges, Nate and Olds College, and our private sector partner, AMIC, Earth and Environmental and Engineering and Consulting firm.
Now that you have this integrated resource management program, what does that do for you? Does it help you in any way?
Yes, it helps us in a couple of ways. First of all, it really focuses our work more towards working with other colleagues to cover the whole spectrum from resource management in the sense of resource survey, resource where the resource is, how to deal with it, all the way till industrial use of that resource. So we cover the whole spectrum. The second way it helps us is it really opens opportunities to bring in more partners into the research we're doing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cheryl.
That was Dr. Salim Aboud, a research scientist with the Alberta Research Council. While at the launch of the ARC's Integrated Resource Management Strategy, I also spoke with Bill Hunter, Cam McGregor, John McDougall, and Dr. Dick Peter. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. You can download past programs on our website at innovationalberta.com. And while you're visiting the website, subscribe to our free online newsletter. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the National Institute for Nanotechnology, the Alberta Research Council, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, True North Energy, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Alberta Conservation Association, Health Sciences Association of Alberta, and the Alberta Ingenuity Fund. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.